Hello, hello, hello. You know what time it is. It's time for Current Ritual on KDNK Radio. And this is your host, SS Kitty. And today, we are going to dive into some juicy topics, per usual. And I am so happy to have a new transplant from Boulder, Madison Cheshire, is here in the studio with me. So Madison, please introduce yourself.
Hi, Kat. Thanks so much for having me. It's great to be here. I am a home birth midwife, and it's given me a lot of juicy experience just interacting with all different types of providers and settings within the maternity care system. And I'm currently working on a project called Birth Pathways, which is supporting people with holistic resources to awaken into body and reproductive sovereignty.
Okay, and that is why we are having this conversation today. With everything in the world, with reproductive rights, with formula, with, you know, all these issues, that's why we're having this conversation, because we're staying current. And the rituals around creating people, birthing people, and then fostering people are a big deal to me and to you, obviously. So that's why we have a lot to talk about. So first things first, for the listeners out there of all ages, if there was something that you could teach us that you would say is a foundation of health or a foundation of healthy birth, what would that be?
Yeah, I think coming into deep and direct relationship with our own bodies, understanding our bodies, their cycles, how they work, and really coming into a trusting relationship between mind, body, spirit, and emotions, really bringing ourselves into alignment with our intentions, allows us to be healthy humans, to have sovereignty over our own bodies, to not give away our power to other types of providers or people that we think know more than we do from the inside.
I think you're hitting on a huge key take-home point for all the listeners, and that would be that you are sovereign over your own body, you have wisdom, and you ultimately know what's best for yourself. And I think that's part of the Current Ritual mission, and all of these different talks we have, is to remind everyone of that sovereignty. And so looking at where we are, you know, as a human culture, do you want to speak to a few of the ways maybe that sovereignty is taken from us that people should be aware of, you know, as consumers of healthcare, consumers of, you know, are there a few things that come to mind that you want people to know where that's a place where we lose that sense of, you know, being grounded in who we are and what we want and knowing what we need?
Yeah, you know, there's so much pressure from the outside culture, from our family systems, and from institutions to kind of hand over power and responsibility, because both of those things come together, right? And to some extent, it can be really easy to give our power over when we're afraid or something like that. And so I think that we have a lot of really powerful institutions in this country, and in a lot of ways, we've been conditioned through schooling and through our relationship with kind of the power and the structure of the medical industrial complex to sort of believe that we can be fixed or solved from the outside. And of course, that it is helpful to have a practitioner kind of hold space for us within the right container. But in a lot of ways, I think that when we as one sort of small individual walk into an institution, there is this kind of larger cultural understanding of power within that institution that kind of convinces us or facilitates us handing our power over.
Right. I took art history, and big buildings is all about power and authority.
Yes.
It's worked for a very long time. So, you know, we're human and we're susceptible to that power. And you bring up a great point, because like in the Valley, our birthing options are really Valley View Hospital, Aspen Valley Hospital. There are no birthing centers here.
There is a home birth midwife.
There is a home birth midwife, yeah. You know, like who's holding it strong out there. But if you're having a baby in this valley, you're probably having it at a hospital, more than likely, you know, the majority at least. And so that's why we're having this conversation today, is because being someone who can walk into an institution and hold your ground is a big deal. Yes. And that's sort of, I guess, what we're hitting on today is like, how do we make people who feel authentic, feel grounded, feel strong in themselves and their health choices and their health decisions, so that they can stand in their power when these decisions, you know, come to roost.
Yes. Which brings like one, you know, one of my teachers, her name is Samantha Zipporah. She is an amazing resource when it comes to body sovereignty. And she points out that in the word sovereignty is the word reign, right? And so in order to reign over any territory, we have to know what the geography is. So that's one major tool, is understanding the anatomy and physiology of our bodies, and then getting really comfortable and confident with the cycles and rhythms. And especially, you know, I'm speaking primarily at this point to people who have wombs, though we all have rhythms. But when we have wombs and we learn about our cycles, specifically learning about cervical mucus, learning about basal body temperature, like when we know where we are in our cycle, we know how our cycle deviates. When we go into an institution that says that everyone cycles 28 days long and we know that ours is not, we're going to be much better able to figure out and puzzle out for ourselves what's going on, rather than just being kind of having an overlay of protocol put onto our individual and unique rhythms.
Well, and you bring up a point that I know I hear it, and it happened to me. I grew up in Louisville, Kentucky, and pretty much when you turned 16, you got on birth control. I'm not exactly sure why that was happening. But, you know, talking about options for contraception, for empowered birth, for choice with sexuality, if as soon as our women, our daughters hit puberty, we throw them on birth control and we control their cycle that way, you know, that is a choice that we make. But you're offering a different choice, in that let's educate about your body. Let's have you feel sovereign and knowledgeable about your body. Let's not have this be a gross or shameful thing. You know, let's get empowered through knowledge and through mentorship, potentially, so that we have a different option.
Yes, and through experience with our own bodies. And since you mentioned contraception, one really wild thing about having so much of our youth be put on birth control, is that, especially like hormonal birth control pills, is that we're told that that regulates our cycles. And the truth is that it actually causes us not to ovulate at all. Like, we do not have the full spectrum of a cycle. We don't have the ovulation event. And the bleeding that occurs is also not a period, because we're not shedding a uterine lining since we didn't ovulate. We're actually having withdrawal bleeding from the level of hormones being taken away for a week.
You heard it here first. If you didn't know, this is the truth. We're sharing some deep truth with everyone that needs to be shared. And something, I read a Psychology Today article back when I was 19 years old, and I immediately took myself off birth control after reading that Psychology Today article. And the reason why is because it explained this, you know, phenomena of what birth control does, and it actually makes you, you know, hormonally like you're pregnant, and that's why you don't ovulate. And so it actually changes your pheromones. And so when you're on birth control or when you're pregnant, you're actually attracted subconsciously to similar genome people, men, because you're needing protectors around you, you know, to protect the baby. This is all evolutionary. You know, this is not intentional. We don't intend to, you know, have this happen. Well, then if you are ovulating and you're not on birth control and you're going through these cycles, you're actually attracted to dissimilar genome partners. And so if you think about it, that's why I was like, I'm getting off this birth control. I'm not going to mess up my pheromones and like my reproduction and knowing, you know, where I'm going. And I was very upset. Like, why don't we talk about this? Why isn't this something that we know or people realize, like the risk reward, you know? It's almost like the risk reward conversation never happened.
Yes, which is, you know, in medicine, it's called informed consent. And one of the major tenets in my practice as a home birth midwife was shifting the concept of informed consent into what I call true informed choice. And the difference between those two things is informed consent tends to get used as, here, I am as a provider proposing some kind of procedure or medication or something to you, and I need you to sign away my liability in you choosing to do this thing. That's really how it functions most of the time.
Correct.
And true informed choice is, what are the risks of this thing? What are the benefits of this thing? How does this thing work and interact in my body? What if I didn't do that thing? Then what? You know? And in order to really understand, and have sovereignty over our bodies, we have to know all of those pieces. And those are really good questions to ask a provider if they're...
Can you say that? I was going to say, for everyone listening, this would be like step one into becoming a more informed consumer of healthcare, is asking these questions. So can you go over them again, please?
Yes. So what are the possible risks? And also, how likely are those risks, right? What are the benefits? What are we looking to get from this? And how likely is it it's going to work? Why are we going to do this?
I know, that was the last one.
And what if we don't do it? Right. I mean, that's that, I think, for advocacy in the hospital, especially if we're feeling pressure in a certain moment, if we're feeling unsure or confused, if we just need more time, a great step to take is, maybe I just need a little bit of time to think about it, or what would happen if I choose not to do this thing?
Right, right. Excellent. So take note out there. Ask questions. You know, there's something called white coat syndrome. And that's where it's a real phenomenon that's been studied, where people, when they're with the doctor, they'll tend to undervalue or underestimate their symptoms or their hardships or while they're there in the first place. And they'll overestimate how well they're doing. And it's almost and they call it white coat syndrome, because it's almost like you don't even mean to, but you like want to be a good student, or you want to people please, or you don't want them to make the doctor mad. And there's this like power dynamic, you know, so it's interesting to, again, like we said at the beginning, to be able to stand in your power, be your authentic self, even in those scenarios that we know through research tend to make humans act different or crazy for whatever, you know, power structure reason.
Exactly. And for so many of us, especially female-bodied people, we're enculturated not to express boundaries, you know, from childhood. So it's not just women, but it is more, I think, for women and female bodies, that we're taught not to say no, and not to express our boundaries. And so the more that we practice that, starting right now, starting today, in the right moments, right, when we actually feel a no. So, like, that's the other piece, is tuning into ourselves, finding whether we feel a yes or a no for something, and then communicating that accurately. Doing that in our everyday lives is a great way to practice, and it's a lot easier most of the time than it is when we get into an institution like a hospital and we're standing in front of a doctor and there's kind of this ticking clock.
Right, right. Great point. And so that's where, as a midwife, you know, interviewing you, we could have just talked about, you know, pregnant women, pregnant people, birthing. But something that you have brought up when we've had conversations is how you would like to start the education for birthing people a lot sooner. And so that's the next thing I want to tap into, is your knowledge about what information do you wish people had long before they give birth, long before they even get pregnant?
Yes. So I am really passionate that if we start to understand and advocate for ourselves within the maternity care system, or within the healthcare system, right, if that's something that we already know how to do, we are going to walk in already a lot stronger when it comes to choosing providers and understanding what kind of procedures, tests, screenings, why they're happening. Like, it's a body of knowledge that not only midwives can have, right? And that's where I say that having sovereignty, having power over our own bodies, is also a responsibility. And so in the best way, right? Like, when we pair our willingness to devote attention and time to learning about something, like pregnancy care or like pregnancy physiology, prior to the event, we are in a much stronger place to navigate it. And so what I see is that people in their first trimester, sometimes like second trimester by the time they find out, there's a lot to assimilate. There's a lot of work to do. Pregnancy is this like really transformative initiatory time. And at that point, we certainly can start learning about it. But imagine if when we first came into our menstruation, we were starting to learn about it then.
Right. Like at puberty, like, let's start this education for males and female bodies at puberty. So then we're creating community that's sort of all on the same page on how we show up for each other.
Exactly. And then when we walk into a healthcare setting, we know the rhythms of our bodies, we know the anatomy of our bodies, we know how it functions, and we know what's normal, you know? And that gives us so much more to work with when it comes to, do I want that procedure? Do I want that test? And perhaps the answer is yes, and perhaps the answer is no. But we literally don't know if we don't know what it's for, what the risks are.
Right.
You know.
And working, I have a history of working in the neonatal intensive care unit and hospitals and early intervention and, you know, different levels of Western medicine. And then I've been in private practice now in the Valley for 6 years. And I've heard similar stories many times of people who did not inform themselves, did not seek out additional education. They might have gone to the birthing class at the hospital, but that was about the extent of their preparedness, and basically just trusting the healthcare system, you know, putting full 100% trust in the healthcare system. And I'm not saying don't do that. Like, there are wonderful healthcare practitioners, you know, but I think all of us can agree that there's room to improve in American healthcare. And so it's like putting 100% of your trust in that system is part of not being an informed consumer of healthcare. And the clients that I've had and the stories that I've heard are after the fact. People are like, I wish I would have educated myself. And I've heard terrible stories about things that just kind of spiral out of control. And not pointing blame at anyone, except for if you are a more informed consumer of healthcare, you might not get into these spiral situations where you feel like you completely lose control of your birth plan, of what happens to your body, of what happens to your baby. And it just happened. Like, I just had a client, 2 weeks ago who said this very thing. I just put all my trust in the hospital. Mm-hmm. And I should have educated myself first.
Yes. I mean, so much of why I'm developing this current project and offering Birth Pathways is because of all of the times I've had people say, I wish I knew. And I think a really good illustration of just, there are a lot of common misconceptions. One that most people will be familiar with is the idea that if the cord is around the baby's neck. So, like, how many times have I had people say, but what if the cord is around the baby's neck? And I can confidently tell you that if the cord is around the baby's neck, I would put my finger in between it, loop it around the baby's head, and the baby would come out just fine. You know, the number of
times. I love
how
confident you are saying that.
Because I've had so, I mean, the cord is around the neck or even around the baby like 30% of the time.
Right. And that's where, that's what I hear a lot from, is like these events that are relatively common and like normal and usual become these big things occasionally.
Mm-hmm. Right. And very, very rarely with the cord around the neck, right? Like, there are others that might be more of, they're actually a higher risk factor, but it's not even considered a higher risk situation.
Interesting. Yeah. Interesting. And that's where, too, I've heard, like, the heart rate dropping. Mm-hmm. You know, like, yeah, they're getting squeezed out of your body. This is a big deal. Their heart rate is going to change. And I've learned, you know, because I've tried to inform myself that that can be normal. And that's another like triggering event that can trigger people into like a panic. Mm-hmm. Where if we were educated about this, then maybe we wouldn't panic.
Yeah. And, you know, that brings me to kind of the concept of the cascade of interventions that can happen during pregnancy and labor. And these are, they're really helpful and important things to be informed about, the way that certain procedures like breaking the waters in labor or even having continuous fetal monitoring, like you're mentioning, having it be continuous rather than intermittent increases statistically the number of C-sections, but does not increase or does not correlate to better outcomes.
Right, right.
Exactly. So, you know, just knowing things like this and creating, you know, we're applying it to pregnancy and labor, but like you're saying, this can apply to absolutely everything. Creating something like a birth plan, people have a lot of misconceptions about that, as though a birth plan is going to interface with your provider for you, and that's really not the purpose of it. A birth plan is so that you have explored all of your options and decided what you think about them, and then can also serve the function of helping your providers support you for your vision. Right. Mm-hmm. But you can create this a similar kind of plan. We now have the resources to educate ourselves online with people that we know, with people who have been through it, to be able to advocate for ourselves better.
And I think you bring up a great point in that, you know, historically until modern history, women birthed with midwives and birthed like at home and in community. And I learned something recently in this book I'm reading called Belonging. And it said that there's like this internal need that we're all born with to be born into a room with 40 eyes that know us. And I just like had to pause, and because I think that this longing that all of us have, this drive that all of us have, goes back to needing community and at the start being born into community. Like, imagine the vibe. You know, I watched a video of, you know, it was all these women and they were singing as the baby was being born, you know, and there were grandmothers in the room and it was a home birth, and you know, it was beautiful. And I gave birth to my son in a hospital and had a cascade of interventions that even as an informed consumer of healthcare, I had to like fight a bit to still, you know, have the birth that I was trying to have. And so I just took pause about the role of community around birth and how we're missing, you know, we're missing that piece. And so since community is so important with birth pathways and your mission, how do you integrate that need for community or recognize that need for community?
Yes. You know, having supportive people in our sphere is the essence of life, being able to have these co-creative relationships. And one thing that I definitely saw, especially during the pandemic, is that birthing in hospitals, no one was allowed to be in there. And in a home birth setting, we have no such regulations. And we were able to really allow the family to reclaim birth, not just during the pandemic, but always, right?
Like, you, I just got full body goosebumps.
Yeah.
About that, like that reality.
Yeah.
And that's a reason why we're having this conversation, too, is I do think with the pandemic and what happened, more people maybe are concerned about this topic or interested or aware, you know, that we need to have this conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I got like 5 times more calls at the beginning of the pandemic and in through the first year of people considering home birth that wouldn't have been because they wanted to have their beloveds there. And I think you're really getting at another point, which is like kind of the why of all of this. Like, why is it so important how we come into the world, right? And imagine the difference between coming into the world from the womb, from this like muted, rhythmic, warm, dark, enclosed space. And it's already a huge transition to come out into the bright world. But at home, you can have dimmed lights if you want to. And some hospitals are implementing that, especially if you work with nurse midwives as well. You can come into the world in quiet or whatever sound you want your baby to first hear, whether that's a prayer or a song or nothing at all or your voice, right? And that transition of like being this totally aware, amazing, open being, having that be a gentle transition. I mean, you work with the nervous system, Kat. Like, mm-hmm. We understand how the nervous system holds on to trauma. Mm-hmm. So minimizing the amount of trauma that happens in the birth experience really allows mothers and babies to bond better, to, you know, it. I have seen certainly that babies are less fussy when they come into the world in a gentle way and have a gentle environment around them.
Right. And that goes back to something that I learned years ago working in the NICU. And that's, there's actually this like beautiful reflex integration sequence that happens when you're born, and it's easily interrupted. You know, like there's this like leap that babies do and crawl, and like it's this like their first adventure to get to the breast, you know. It's like their first expedition as humans to get to the breast. Oh, and are we already over? Oh no. Okay, well, everybody, obviously, I'm going to have Madison Cheshire back on the program in a few episodes. But I hope you gain something from today. If nothing else, be a good consumer of healthcare. Focus on regaining your sovereignty. And let's support one another. Love
thanks,
you.
Kat.
Yeah, thanks, Madison. Everyone, take care of each other. Have a beautiful day. Until next time, this has been SS Kitty on Current Ritual Radio.